Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast, brought to you by The Nation Magazine. I'm Dave Zirin. We have an extremely special show for you this week. I am going to be speaking to Kenny Collins, who spent 17 years on Maryland's death row and is now looking for the first time in decades at the probability, not possibility, of breathing free. You want to hear what Kenny has to say. It was great to do this interview. Also, though, we're going to start with something else because of the immediacy of the political moment. In the wake of the killing of Alex Preddy in Minneapolis, there are finally rumbles about the world boycotting the 2026 World Cup, and I'm going to speak about that. So let's get started with me talking about the World Cup, and then we're going to talk to the one and only Kenny Collins. As promised, first some words about the World Cup. Okay, look, this week, a leading German soccer official named Oke Gottlich said that the time has come to consider the unthinkable and unprecedented, a boycott of the World Cup in protest of the fascist, marauding, and exhausting military threats of Donald J. Trump. The most watched sporting event on Earth is due to be played this year in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And Gottlich said in a Friday interview before the ICE murder of Minneapolis VA nurse Alex Preddy that, quote, "the time has come to seriously consider and discuss this." Gottlich was responding not only to state agents executing people in U.S. streets, but Trump's military threats against Greenland and the people of Europe that have shattered old alliances. However specious these alliances may have always been, the alternative Trump has advanced is a new world order of unchecked U.S. expansion and aggression, where psychotic, paunchy underling Stephen Miller feels free to call for occupation and bloodshed if Europe gets in their way. Gottlich is no lightweight on the German scene. He is one of the German Federation's 10 vice presidents and the president of the Bundesliga club St. Pauli. Folks may know St. Pauli as a proudly left-wing political team whose fan allegiances generally align with what Gottlich is putting forward, although calling for an actual boycott is above and beyond what any European power broker has done. It is an earthquake, and it moves what they call the Overton window as to where this discussion could go. Gottlich was pressed by a reporter about the St. Pauli players on the German national team and whether he felt like he was undercutting their personal and national ambitions. Gottlich replied, "The life of a professional player is not worth more than the lives of countless people in various regions who are being directly or indirectly attacked or threatened by the World Cup host. What were the justifications for the boycotts of the Olympic Games in the 1980s? By my reckoning, the potential threat is greater now than it was then. We need to have this discussion. It is actually past due to have this discussion. 10 very long months ago, I wrote a piece with Jules Boykoff titled, "With Ice Out of Control, How Can the U.S. Co-host the 2026 World Cup?" It was a call for countries outside of the United States to boycott. We did not know at the time that the U.S. would be threatening war on European soil, kidnapping world leaders, blowing fisher folk out of the ocean, kidnapping five-year-olds, executing U.S. citizens in our streets, and then brazenly covering it up. And yet, even 10 months ago, in the aftermath of the ICE kidnappings of Mahmoud Khalil, Rumeysa Ozturk, and the revelations of the U.S.-run slave labor camps in El Salvador, where people were being sent without oversight, it was clear that the direction of this country would be towards fascist violence. Our argument was that countries were being derelict and irresponsible to not warn their citizens that traveling to the United States would be perilous, and not just for them. Players, coaches, and their families would all be at risk. Gotlick is taking it to the next level of challenging, at minimum, Europe to not kiss the ring of a death cult. Already, FIFA, the world governing body for soccer, has been appalled by their chief, Gianni Infantino's, pathetically weak and bent posture when in Trump's presence. The bowing, scraping Infantino has visited the White House more than any foreign leader and presented Trump with that tacky FIFA Peace Prize. Infantino might feel like a world leader when paraded around by Trump like a hairless poodle, but his standing inside his own organization has produced contempt. In the face of this, Gotlick not only sees a moral imperative, but an opportunity. As organizations and society, we're forgetting how to set taboos and boundaries and how to defend values, he said. Taboos are an essential part of our stance. Is a taboo crossed when someone threatens? Is a taboo crossed when someone attacks? When people die? I would like to know from Donald Trump when he has reached his taboo, and I would like to know from German soccer chief Bernard Neuendorf and Gianni Infantino. While Gotlick cited the 1980 Olympic boycott of Moscow following their invasion of Afghanistan, a far better historical comparison comes from his own backyard, the 1936 Berlin Olympics. Hitler openly used these games as a place to normalize his Nazi regime and project himself as a leader among world leaders. Of course, we can look back at that Olympics and revel in classic sports moments like Jesse Owens winning 4 gold medals and through his athleticism spitting in the eye of Hitler's dreams of Nordic supremacy. But the true story of those games is that it was to the shame of the world that countries traveled to Berlin to play for the entertainment of their fascist hosts. This is not hindsight. There were volcanic debates across the globe, and particularly the United States, about whether they should travel to a Germany already openly imprisoning political dissidents and Jews, openly burning books, and building a military arsenal for expansion. Organizations like the NAACP agitated vehemently for a U.S. boycott. The Amateur Athletic Union, by a sliver of a vote, ignored their pleas as well as the arguments of others and decided to send U.S. athletes to compete. These decisions now look obscene. Gotlick is offering Europe and beyond an off-ramp to not be reviled by history. They need to embrace it and unequivocally boycott, at minimum, the World Cup game scheduled to be played in this murdering shithole once known as the United States. 10 months ago, they needed to do it for the safety of their own fans. Now they must act for the safety of the rest of us. One last note. I went to college in the Twin Cities. I still have many friends there. All of this cuts to the bone, but as the people of Minneapolis have bravely shown, it will be met with a response. We aren't Gianni Infantino. Our backs are not bent, and Minnesota Nice would sooner chew this fucker's finger off to the bone than ever kiss his ring. We'll be back after a word from the nation, and then you're going to hear from somebody you do need to hear from. And I'm talking about Kenny Collins. We'll be back right after this with a quick word from Edge of Sports. Hey, everybody out there. This is Dave Zirin with the Edge of Sports podcast. People got to know that we put this podcast on with elbow grease and bubble gum on a weekly basis. And we're proud of the work that we do. We love it. But we can't do it without support from you, the listener. So please go to patreon.com/edgeofsportspod and support the podcast. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. Any little bit you might give to support the podcast actually makes a huge difference to the work we're trying to do. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. We appreciate you. Make no mistake about it. And now, back to the Edge of Sports podcast. As promised, we have Kenny Collins. Kenny Collins, how are you, sir? Tell us where you are right now as we are having this conversation.
I'm doing okay. I'm in the truck because I'm working at this company, this nonprofit company called Living Classroom. It's a company, nonprofit organization that helps reentry men and women coming out of the system that trains them to get skilled trades such as machinery, such as forklift, a bobcat. You can get certifications and ATLV, which is a street cleaner. The machines that cleans, that drives around cleaning streets.
Right, right.
And you also can get like plumbing, electrician or plumbing certification. And they pay you to train you. It's a 4-month program, job training program. And they also try to find you gainful employment at the same time.
So does this mean, so our listeners know, are you getting out? Are you going to live outside those prison walls? Is this in front of you?
Well, I chose to get these, especially the machinery skill trades, because I'm supposed to be going to a ranch. It's called the Hangbelly Ranch in Mopine, Oregon. That's 1,000 acres. And I'm supposed to be being trained into. It's a family business, and they're supposed to be training me into the family business. So, having these skills and machinery would be more beneficial to me on that ranch because it's 1,000 acres.
And when do you think you're going to be able to get to this ranch?
I'm looking forward to trying to get there within the next 30 days or after 30 days. I got to get the interstate transfer because I'm supposed to be residing currently at College Park, Maryland with two friends until I get interstate transfer approval for me to get be able to go there. So that's something I'm working on right now as before I get released, which will be in February of next month.
That's got to feel incredible to know there's a release date in front of you.
Yeah, it is, man. Something I fought for, man, from the very beginning. Because, you know, I'm dealing with an actual innocent situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That Baltimore County used me for a high-profile case for their political careers to climb the ladder. And then they try to sentence me to death to try to execute me to cover up the truth about the case, so I would never have a chance to expose it.
Now you spent 17 years on death row.
Yeah, 17 years.
Child, that's incredible.
What was that like for you?
Oh man, I mean, It had its scary moments, you know, because right after I got sentenced, they started executions here in the state of Maryland. Because before then, they wasn't executing no condemned death row inmates since 1976.
And they started them up again 20 years later.
Yeah, because it was a guy that was on, it was a condemned death row guy that he wanted to die. He didn't want to fight. And so they was abiding by his wishes, and that started the whole thing. And so right after they executed him, the state of Maryland executed a total of five. During that time, I was affiliated, associated with multiple strong activist organizations out there called the Campaign to End the Death Penalty, the Abolitionist Movement, and the Socialist International Social Worker Organization. Those organizations were against the death penalty. And so they were contacting all of us that was currently on death row, making us aware of who they are, and was trying to help all of us fight our individual cases to try to help us, stop the system, the government from executing us.
There are aspects of your case that are shocking when I look back at them. Is it true that you weren't even named as a suspect in your case until prosecutors charged and tried another individual, and then that person was not even convicted?
Yeah, that's true.
Jeez.
The case derives from Baltimore County, and they had both perpetrators in custody, and first they had one of them in custody, and they put a jailhouse informant in his cell with him, and he told the jailhouse informant who the other guy was. And so the homicide detective went to the guy's residence where he was staying at and knocked on the guy's door, and the guy answered the door. So when the homicide detective informed him of who he was and who he was looking for and asked him, do we live here? The guy said no, that he don't live here. And it was somebody that was walking down the street that knew him and said just gave a greetings, how you doing, Pete? Like, what's up, Peanut? And mentioned his name. So the homicide detective looked at him and said, I thought you said that wasn't your name. And took him in custody. And during the interrogation, he admitted to being with the guy. But for some strange reason, they didn't charge.
Wow. For some strange reason. That's really a way to put it. I understand there was no physical evidence in your case. No evidence, no independent witnesses. Just convicted to death on a snitch testimony?
Yeah. One of the guys had got his cousins to, for some reason, we're still trying to uncover that mystery as to how did I replace the guy who admitted to being with the other guy that they had when they had both of them in custody. But how my name came about was through the help of one of the guys. He had two cousins and a neighbor, and all of them was facing criminal charges as far as drug charges, and one of them had carjacked armed robbery. And put somebody in the trunk of the car that they carjacked. So they was facing some serious charges. And so we're still trying to uncover how that they was able to include me to replace the guy that they had in custody.
That's so awful to me. You spent 17 years on death row. How is it you were eventually able to get off of the row?
Well, it was. Couple things that was going on at that time. They was doing a moratorium study on Maryland's capital punishment at that time, and one of their star witnesses, contacting the ACL, the president of the ACLU, and the president of the Friends of Liberty Service of America, telling them that he did something years ago that had been eating his conscience up. That he didn't want to see an innocent man being executed.
Mm.
And so that started the ball rolling for my attorney asking for an evidentiary hearing back in court to discuss that star witness recantation. And then it was discovered that my trial attorney had been disbarred for not filing his taxes. And he had hired two psychiatric doctors as current witness for him, stipulating that he suffered from a mental ailment, which is called severe diminishing capacity disorder. And he had used a color analysis chart as defense, showing when his mental state was fluctuating. And that chart was that showed his the time when his mental state was fluctuating was the same time that he had took my case.
Good gracious, this is your lawyer?
Yeah, my trial attorney. Yeah, man, and he called no witnesses. My family wanted to come testify. He wouldn't allow my family to testify. And once the judge wrongfully sentenced me to death, he went over to consulted the victim's family, opposed to consoling my family, because my family was bursting out in tears and, you know, in frustration.
Sure.
And he didn't come over there and console them. He went to the victim's family.
I'm glad you said that, because it really says something about the representation you received.
That's how I got overturned on ineffective assistant counsel, because the laws stipulated that I'm supposed to have a attorney under the ABA standards of attorney. The ABA means American Bar Association. That anytime that attorneys supposed to represent clients, they supposed to represent clients 100%. They supposed to give them 100% representation. And that's the law.
Wow. What about the movement? What role did the movement play in getting you off the roll, or at least giving you hope as this trial went along?
Well, the birth of the Free Kitty Collins campaign movement came from the campaign and the death penalty. Because when I was on death row, every time my appeal was being denied, as well as a lot of other guys that was on death row, we were trying to find a way to us to have a voice so we could speak about the illegalities of our cases, that the courts were scared to allow our cases to be heard. And so the campaign, the death penalty, came up with an idea to start us having an opportunity to speak at colleges, and we had titled it Live from Death Row. That's how the birth of Live Death Row came. And so it was only two of us that accepted that offer to participate in that. And it was me and another guy named Tyrone Gilly Max. May he rest in peace, because they executed him.
Yeah, they executed him. I remember that night. Harrowing night.
And so I kept it going, you know what I mean, right after they executed him. And then we were speaking at, it started off at all the colleges here in the state of Maryland, and they was recording them, and then they was networking them, the recordings, and to other colleges, and it spread, it went national to almost all the colleges in the United States for 30 years straight.
Wow, 30 years of people fighting with you. How did that part feel for you, that you've always had this level of solidarity and love on the outside of the prison walls?
I swear, man, it was really motivation. It was inspirational and motivational, empowering my spirit while I was on there, to know that there's people on the outside that really acknowledge that not just Maryland's criminal broken justice system, but the whole criminal broken justice system in the whole United States as a whole.
How have you changed over the last many years? The Kenny Collins that will be leaving prison, how has that Kenny Collins different? No. How have you changed over the last many years? The Kenny Collins that will be leaving prison, how is that Kenny Collins different from the man who entered prison?
Well, I mean, you know, the experience from the journey from being on death row really gave me an epiphany, awakening about what life is all about. And it made me have a more deeper perspective of what life is truly really all about, and how we all all of us on this shared planet, man, that we don't really see the real deepness of our life, our personal life, or just on this planet.
Mm.
And, you know what I mean? And so being, you know, me being on death row with the reality of they trying to remove me from the planet Earth, not spend the rest of my life in prison or ever see society again, it made me really just time travel, try to like visualize and time traveling about history, about life, us as a human species on this shared planet Earth, and make me have a more deeper perspective of what life is really all about.
No doubt about that. So who are some of your heroes? Some of the people through their words, their actions, keep you going?
Well, who was one of the motivational inspiration to me was Nelson Mandela.
Mm.
Because he was facing the same type of atrocity, although it wasn't a death sentence, but he was facing death dealing with that that apartheid over there in his country, and how his mental state was dealing with being in those side themselves, not having no physical contact with family. You know, I experienced that in, you know, being in some of the Maryland's prisons. I was in the Supermax for 8.5 years, which was a segregated prison for 23-1, with no physical contact, with no loved ones.
Can you tell my audience what 23-1 means?
That means that you're inside of a cell, a cage cell, for 23 hours. You only get to come out for 1 hour for a shower or to come out to what they call recreation, where you can come out and exercise and stretch your body out for being trapped inside that cell for 23 hours.
They talk about cruel and unusual punishment. Hard to think of more that's more cruel.
Yeah, and the food is terrible. And cause I call it fear factor food.
Because
you don't know what it is. You don't know what you're going to eat. What's inside of it? The meal that they feed you. And when you buck against the administration for when they're being discriminatory against you, if they put you on segregated lockup, they will feed you what is called the loaf, the bread. You ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
And that loaf is, I can't even describe the ingredients inside the loaf, but it has no taste.
No, I can see it.
And that's all you eating is that loaf of bread.
Look, I know we were running out of time with you, so I really wanted to ask you what you were looking forward to most as far as getting out.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm most definitely looking forward to, you know, getting out, spending some quality time, you know, with family and friends and loyal loved ones that have been supporting me throughout the years, and do some traveling. And also, I want to most definitely do some speaking and, you know, continue doing speaking, trying to educate society continuously about the broken criminal justice system in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because it continues to exist, and a lot of citizen society, they only see things like in movies or, you know, being sensationalized in movies or things that they see on the news, but they only getting a little glimpse of what really goes on. It's a society within a society, so they don't really know the history and the totality of the things that goes on inside the prison society.
Mm.
So I want to educate them on it, and I want to be able to actually help family loved ones that supports those that's incarcerated, with the men and women from the juvenile to the adults, try to educate them a little more deeper on, so they can be able to better have knowledge of how to assist and help them fight. You know, for them to get their freedom.
You've been so generous with your time, and it's such a beautiful thing you're doing, and how you want to commit yourself going forward to telling people the truth about what you've experienced, seen, and learned Are we going to have some serious celebration when you finally get the heck out of there?
Yeah, we is, man, because you know that supposed to have a deal going on with Maryland Public Television. Her name is Melanie Pacinas, and she's stationed in Miami, Florida, so she's supposed to be flying in once I get released during the celebration, and I guess that's supposed to start during that process. And also, I want to be able to actually expound a lot of some of my artwork and my poems to show. Like, it's a powerful artwork and poems that I'm looking forward to sharing that with society as well.
Did you want to read a poem before we sign off?
Hey, you know I'm inside the truck. I didn't bring it with me.
Next time.
Let's hear it. How must we submit, or be, it's called Uncle Sam Who, Not You.
Let's do it.
Why must we submit, or obey by your so-called rules, when we never ever met yet, what cost implied, I owe him dues. God manifested this life in this most definite forsaken land. Have you once asked him to open up his beloved hand? No one can officially say they ever seen or met you in person, yet each face on that dollar bill reveals who controlled our world and wills with greed and is continuously searching. For so long, you've been strong, pointing your finger, saying, I want you to do as I say and fight my battles and die for me too. Uncle Sam, I ain't no fool, nor am I blind. Your genocide number has long passed overdue, Mr. Scrooge. Uncle Sam, who? Not you.
Wow. Okay, Kenny, that was special, man.
Okay, that was special.
So I got some more, man. So I'm going to be sending them to you so you can showcase them to the listeners, man. Because I don't have them all on my possession. I got them at the headquarters. I brought them, but I'm in the truck at work.
Wow, I love it.
Yeah. So I'm going to be sending it to you. And I got some powerful artwork, too.
Oh, that's amazing. It's great to hear your voice, Kenny Collins. It really is. With all the hope you have in a future that you've more than earned and more than deserve.
I really appreciate it, too, man. I look forward to me and you taking it to more higher heights as well.
We will be chopping it up, no doubt about it.
No doubt, man. For all the listeners, I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I appreciate you. And I hope everybody can come on board and support the Free Kenny Collins campaign, because I'm trying to get Governor Westmore to sign my clemency. He had my clemency petition since February the 14th of 2024, and it's a lot of powerful supporters on board, but more voices can be heard, and I think that could put pressure on him to sign for my clemency. So I can be free, totally free.
Amen, amen. Well, thank you so much, Kenny. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you so much to Kenny Collins. Thank you so much to the producer of this podcast, David Tigaboo. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.